he has also been found to be a very useful person. You've been going on a few more missions. Most lately, you went to... You went on a mission. I remember now. To the Dwarven City, were able to recover another one of the time stones, and the doctor noticed that some of the lines of time had been unlocked, and now you were able to go and go back in time to prevent something from happening. You're not sure what it is, but it was important. As you went back in time, first to Beacon Ridge, you discovered a dark entity that was threatening the city, which you were able to overcome, and it seems that you saved Brunin and his brother, although Brunin has no memory of actually living in Beacon Ridge. After that, you got back into the TARDIS to track down the second of these rogue timelines, and you come out into what looks like a very large grand church. An order of seeming monks or priests or something are getting ready for a ceremony, and at the front of the church, or I should say, you are standing at the back where, you know, there would be doors where you come into the church, go down the aisles with the pews, and at the front, you see someone who is dressed more ornately, looks like he's the head of this order, getting ready to anoint somebody, and he says, "Brother Katsu, it is a pleasure to welcome you into our order." And suddenly, appearing behind them is this same black entity that you had been fighting before. He puts his hand on the man in charge, and he crumbles into dust. Katsu moves backwards and rolls down the stairs. It looks like the entity is getting ready to strike. And right at that point, of course, several of you were teleported into what looked like a coliseum, and you met Myth, who put you through a few tasks because he wanted the energy from your souls, the excess energy you develop by throwing yourself into something. Eventually, he relented when he discovered just how passionate you were about each other and how much energy that gave him. He freed Carrick, who he had sitting unconscious. Carrick, by the way, you remember none of this, so none of it applies to you. And then all of you were suddenly put back at that exact point where you were taken out of the church, with the exception that suddenly a bucket appears above Katsu, the Katsu who just came out of the TARDIS. A diamond bucket appears over his head, drops and hits him on the head, giving him 5 points of damage. There is chaos in this room that you've now returned to. People are running to and fro, trying to figure out what's going on. Katsu is... The other copy of Katsu that you found in this room is sitting at the bottom of some stairs that lead up to a platform on the front with the dark creature looming over him. Suddenly, the dark creature raises its head. "You, how did you follow me here? The timelines are weakening. The energy is being dissipated. Seems I shall have to move quickly." You may now all roll initiative, because this thing is about to attack. Thank you.
Nine.
What is Carrick's dexterity modifier, or excuse me, his initiative modifier?
His modifier is just a +4.
Okay, thank you. All right. Interestingly enough, the Katsu of the original realm who just came out of the TARDIS, you get to go first. There is a dark entity looming over your doppelganger. He is 30 feet away. What do you do?
Sorry, who is it that was going first?
Katsu, it's me. You go first.
Sorry, I forgot where the unmute button was somehow. Anyway, so I see him taking it away, and what I will try and do is I will try and like it's the black creature we saw before, right?
Yeah, it's the same creature.
All right, I'll try. I think it's summon monster level 3. Yeah, I think that's a 3 on there. It's very tiny print on my screen. Yes, that is a 3.
All right, you begin summoning the monster. Now, summon monster, it takes a full round to do it, and then the monster appears in the next round, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, then you are readying your incantation, summoning the monster. Next after Katsu will be Mew.
Seeing the monster, and realizing he only has one spell left, considering he didn't get to sleep after the last battle, Mew is actually going to stand in front of Katsu, and say, "Katsu, hold on to me." As you see, he closes his eyes and spreads his arms out to the side. And you see his form almost seem to dissolve into smoke as it drops down to the ground and then begins to shift and bubble and reform as it almost seems to form a large, almost 7 foot tall skeleton. And you hear a voice out of the darkness come and say, "Only forms I've seen before. Well, it's good I have my old memory back." And as the skeleton forms, it's much taller, much thicker, much broader than the last time that you saw Mew. And then you see skin begin to form on top of it. And it stands with its arms crossed before Katsu, as large tufts of golden yellow hair sprouts out from it in every direction. Thick and shaggy, you see standing before you the Golden Yeti. And he already mentioned to tell Katsu to basically ride on his back.
Awesome. Quick question. Katsu, are you still holding the time stones?
I think so. I don't remember actually like giving them off to anyone else.
Okay, if you didn't, then yeah, you still are. Okay.
Okay. You want me to ride that thing?
Just hold on to my back. Like a monkey, really.
Okay, and he does so very reluctantly and so, but he'll comply.
Yeah, I'll help with maneuverability, and I'll also offer you cover.
All right.
Mako, do you get a move action after the transformation?
I do. Hang on, I need to pull up my new speed.
Yeah, black creature and doppelganger Katsu are 30 feet away.
Yeah, I don't have another standard action because I use my standard action to turn into Golden Yeti. Yeah, and I only have question. It wouldn't be. I was going to ask, would throwing a rock be considered a natural attack?
No, it wouldn't. That would be a standard action.
Yep.
Or I mean, no, it would not be a natural attack.
Yeah. So he is actually going to move to the opposite side, and I do now have a speed of 40 feet. I'm going to move to the opposite side of the blackened creature. Well, no. I'm going to stand in front of the katsu that is on the ground.
Okay, so you're going to put yourself between the black creature and the katsu on the ground.
Yes.
Okay. There's not much space there, but there's just enough that you can maneuver in between the two of them.
Yeah, or at least, very least, stand over him in a protective stance.
Right. You are effectively blocking the black thing from getting to that katsu. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, after that is the doctor. And the doctor actually is going to dash back into the TARDIS. And you hear some sort of rummaging going on, and that will be his turn. After the doctor comes Carrick.
All right. So how far away is the big black bad guy?
30 feet away. You're all in a church with some pews, and you've jumped out of the TARDIS in like the center aisle, and that thing is 30 feet away. Mew has maneuvered himself in Yeti form between black thing and the fallen katsu. However, there's enough room in this center aisle that you could charge down there too and still get wax on the black thing if you wanted to.
Okay, so you said 30 feet?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, cool. Then he is going to he'll just kind of move up 10 feet, so he's 20 feet away from it. And then he is going to summon a snowball in his hand. He's going to throw it at the big black thing.
Far away.
So that is a 26.
A 26 hits.
Awesome. Then let's see. That's gonna do 3d6 damage. So he deals 11 points of damage, and you have a fortitude save. DC is 16.
All right. As you throw your snowball, your aim is very good, and it smacks him on the shoulder. But as it does, the snowball suddenly sticks there and then kind of just becomes absorbed into the blackness. It doesn't appear that it really did anything.
Okay. No fortitude save then?
No.
May I speak as a free action?
Yes.
Yeti, you turn to this and says, "Remember, katsu is the key." Not to give too much of a hint to the big, dark, angry creature from before.
Oh, right.
But yeah,
pair to of remind the, and all the guys, that. Of got what, it.
Yeah.
Then right. He will. I guess he will. Let's see, did Katsu ride up on the Yeti, or?
Yes, he did. Katsu is on the back of Yeti.
Okay, then he's going to... Can he use the rest of his move and just, like, move up with them then? So that he can get in touch range of them?
I'm thinking it's not legal, according to Pathfinder rules, to move, use your action, and then move again, unless you have certain feats for that.
I'll look it up. Just because I have time.
Okay. So for right now, I'm going to say no, unless Mako finds out that you can, and then we'll retcon that and say you did.
All right, cool.
After that, it's the thing's turn. And thing, you know, after absorbing snowball, it kind of pumps itself through his arm and up to his hand and reforms as a black orb in his hand. And he says, "Ah, interesting. I'm always one who likes to share. Would you like some, Yeti?" And he thrusts it in the Yeti's face.
Cool. All right. Okay. Quick question. We're in a temple area. Well, no, I'm a Yeti now. Never mind. Doesn't matter.
Okay. Does a 16 hit you?
I believe, earlier I had cast Mage Armor, and if that was the case, this is, then that would be a negatory.
Okay.
My current AC is 17.
Okay, good, good. He actually thrusts it forward, and actually is, you know, this is point-blank range, so it hits, but your Mage Armor sparkles as the black ball comes close enough and just dissipates over the Mage Armor, flying laterally in all directions.
Was it a spell?
No, it was not.
Cool.
Okay. Spell check to try to figure that out?
Figure it out? Sure, I guess.
That's just a 9. Never mind.
Okay. You are sure that this is not a spell, but you don't know anything other than that. And now Black Thing will grumble a little bit, but he will suddenly grows just a little taller, and his mass increases just a bit. A mouth, a very visible mouth, appears on what could be his face, and he says, "Move aside. That one is mine." After the Black Thing's
Come
turn,
and get him.
After Black Thing's turn, it's going to be Bruden's turn.
Is he done?
Yeah, he's done.
Okay, Brew is going to go up and stand with Mew and Katsu. And does it take any extra time to light his sword back on fire?
No, that'll be I'm pretty sure that's a free action. Or a swift action, one of those.
Okay, since I think besides last week's thing, this is the first time he's gotten to use it, so he's happy again. Quick question. The potionable strength from Beacon Ridge, is that still active?
Yes, it is.
Okay, is that plus 2?
Full strength is either plus 2 or plus 4. Just a sec.
Plus 4 to your score, plus 2 to your bonus.
Thank you.
Okay, so then it would be just his normal stuff plus the roll plus 2?
That's correct.
Okay. So he gets up close to Mew and Katsu, and as best as he can, while holding a shield in one hand and a sword in the other hand, he's going to reach out with his shield hand to try to grab onto Katsumu area and then swing with his sword.
So are you grabbing onto the Yeti?
If that's all he can reach, then yes.
Okay, yeah, Katsu's on the Yeti's back, so it'd probably be a little difficult, but you can grab the Yeti and hack at the Black Thing, too, if you want.
Sure, we'll try it.
For your next round, however, you will not be able to add your shield to your armor count.
Okay.
A 25 hits.
Fourteen total.
All right, as you slice your sword across the thing's chest, it actually cuts through easily, like there's little resistance to it, almost like you're slicing through mist, but it does leave a fiery trail across him, at which he howls in pain over. And you can't see any eyes, but this thing looks like it's staring at you.
"You will pay for such insubordination."
But you do damage the thing. Did you say it was 14 points of damage?
I think so. I can remath if you need me to.
No, that's okay. Was that with the extra d6?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Okay, that is Bruin's turn. Next is Miles.
Miles looked like he was going to turn and go sit down somewhere. Then he noticed that Bruin actually did something to this thing. So he's like, eh, nothing to lose. So he's going to go up and take a slice at it.
Are you going to go around behind it and flank it, or where would you like to go?
Let's see. The Yeti and everyone else is on the side away from the TARDIS, right?
Yeti and everyone else are on the side facing the TARDIS. Think of a church auditorium or sanctuary. Down the center aisle, about 3 or 4 pews from the back, the TARDIS appears. You go down all the way down the aisle, and you get to like the pulpit or something. That's where Dark Thing is standing. Yeti is blocking Dark Thing from being able to get to Katsu. But Yeti and Katsu are closer to the TARDIS than the Black Thing is by like a foot. So it's like Yeti is blocking Black Thing's, almost blocking Black Thing's view of the TARDIS.
Okay, so he'd go to the side a little bit, not completely across, but just enough to get a swing in without hitting anything else.
Okay.
So, 15?
You slice at the thing, but even though it's preoccupied with looking at Brunin, as your scythe comes down, it seems to like suddenly mold into some sort of liquid substance and curve itself in an unnatural way that misses your scythe.
Second attack. Wait, no, that was a move. Never mind. He doesn't get a second attack.
Right. Okay. So you moved and attacked. And now back up to the top. Katsu, your turn.
Sorry. So even though I grabbed onto the Yeti, am I still summoning the monster?
Yes, you are.
Okay. So this is the ranch up here, right?
That's right.
Is that
first thing that's going to happen?
I suppose so.
Okay, monster appears. You still have the rest of your action, and then monster will act immediately after you.
Oh, okay. All right, that works. The monster I summoned is going to be a dire bat, because I now have a thing for those things now. it's dire bat, and I will go ahead and, the thing is still holding, like, the doppelganger Katsu, right?
No, the thing is not holding it. Mew has placed himself between Black Thing and Doppelganger.
Gotcha.
So the Doppelganger is just behind you.
Okay, all right. I turn back and I say to my Doppelganger, hey, watch me be awesome. And I perform Searing Light on the Black Thing.
Your Doppelganger looks incredibly shocked that it's you. And he can't say anything. But you perform Searing Light.
Yay! Hang on. Let me get that die. I rolled a 7. That does not look very cool.
Is this a ranged touch attack?
Oh, that's right. I don't have my abilities back. Because I was in the... That was in the other one. The...
Yep.
Okay, never mind. I don't perform Searing Light. Actually, I wouldn't even summon Monster, right? Because I don't have any of my abilities.
kind, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You can't do that stuff.
So, forget all I just said. Yeah, I just pull out my pistol and just shoot him in the face, I guess.
Okay, shoot away.
That'd still be a 7. I completely forgot since the Colosseum. Let's see. Now I even have the wrong character sheet up. Sorry, give me a second. Let me find the right one. Alright, here we go. Range would be plus 5. So plus 5 plus plus 7, that's a 12. 12.
Nah, that doesn't hit. Your shot goes a little wild. You are having to reach around the giant neck of a Yeti, after all.
That is true.
All right, you gonna do anything else on the back of the Yeti?
I'll just say hi-ho silver, since I can't really do anything else. I completely forgot.
He mumbles under his breath, "I'm golden, not silver."
And in fact, it is now the Golden Yeti's turn.
The Golden Yeti will actually turn to the large shadow creature, take two of its hands together, lock them together, and crouch low as he says, "Back off." And he will make a slam attack with both hands just across the creature's jaw, maybe? And that would be an 18 to hit.
There's the vicinity of what you think might have a jaw. Total of 18. No, you slam against him, but he suddenly bends backward, much more than a human body should be able to. But somehow he's able to form himself, so he bends backward, so your fists miss him.
Okay. That's my turn. That's my action.
All right, your Yeti doesn't get a second attack.
It does not.
All right. After Mew is the Doctor. The Doctor then bursts out of TARDIS, and he is rushing down the center aisle, and he's got something strange in his hand. Looks like a remote that has a satellite dish connected to it. And he runs up to the back of the Yeti, almost stepping on the doppelganger, and he shouts, "The time stones! The time stones! Quick! Who has them? I need them!"
I do.
Okay, the Doctor will reach up and try to grab the time stones, which he'll get from you on his on his next turn. You'll be able to give them to him.
Yay!
After the Doctor will come Carrick.
All right.
If you're speaking Quicksilver, we can't hear you. I can see your mouth moving as if you're trying to speak, but...
Your signal seems to come in and out, in and out, in and out, but we're not hearing any actual speech.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Whoa!
Yes, much better.
Okay, sorry. Signal dip. Okay, so he will run up, and even as he's forming a second snowball in his hand, he will reach out and grab hold of whoever it is. He's going to do his best, though, to try to get around behind so that they can start to get a flanking bonus on this guy. Grab hold and join the ring around the Rosie party.
Okay, who are you grabbing onto?
Whoever is, I guess, let's see. Probably Bruman, right? Because Katsu is on the Yeti, so he's grabbing hold of Bruman so that he's kind of opposite the Yeti. Does that work?
Bruman be next to him. You're not quite opposite the Yeti. But because of where Miles is standing, assuming Miles is standing on the other side of the Yeti, then yes, you would be in a flanking position.
And he gets a total of 17.
All right, this time you throw the snowball, but a hole suddenly appears inside the creature that the snowball flies through and harmlessly hits the ground behind him.
Okay.
All right, that will be your turn. All right, after, what was that? That was Carrick. After Carrick is the thing's turn. The thing looks around at all of you and says,
"You and all of you will submit."
And he thrusts his, what look like, arms out, and this shockwave suddenly jumps out.
Is it a spell?
This is a spell, yes.
May I take an attack of opportunity?
It is a spell-like ability. So, I think, do spell-like abilities permit attack of opportunities?
I am not sure. I think spell-like abilities don't, because there are no semantic components, but I will look it up.
I think you are right. Okay, so shock. Then suddenly there is this shockwave. I need to know, does a math. Does a 26 hit? If it hits you, then you will be taking 13 points of damage. 13 points of negative energy damage.
Carrick will use Paladin Sacrifice to protect Mew from that.
Oh, thank you. And just finished looking it up, and it looks like it does. I'll put the rules in the chat for a spell-like ability.
Okay, let's see. Use a spell-like ability. It's a casting spell. And
yes, it does hit.
It says just plainly it provokes an attack of opportunity. So, yes, you do get an attack of opportunity against this.
I'm going to try and hit him in the face. Again.
Do it.
I'm assuming I'm not flanking with anyone.
That's correct.
And that would be a 19 to hit.
A 19. Again, even as it's prepping this explosion, as your fists go to smack it in the face, its head suddenly disappears. Like, it melds into the rest of its body, harmlessly escaping your fist.
Okay.
However, everybody else who has melee abilities, yes, you also get an attack of opportunity. So, in that case, Brunin, you'd attack first, and then Miles.
All right, 26 on the attack. Is Katsu still holding the rock stone thing?
Yes, I believe he is. Yes, right now he is. He hasn't given it to the doctor yet.
Okay.
All right, and yes, that hits.
And bull strength adds to damage as well?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, 18 total then.
The thing is so focused on the Yeti in front of it and dodges attacks, it does not see your attack come in from the side, and you rake it across the side again and leave a fiery trail from which you hear a howl of pain. Miles, you get to attack now.
With flanking, that's also a 26.
All right. Let's see. Mew, I am going to give you a reflex save. Miles is not grabbing onto you, and you notice that he is attacking, so I'm going to give you a reflex save to grab him before he attacks the black thing.
Okay.
Or at least, you know, to put a hand on him.
That'd be a total of 17 for my reflex save.
Ah, you just made it. Yeah,
he reaches out with his fingers and just barely manages to brush him on his shoulder as he swings his arm through.
Excellent. In that case, Miles, yes, you hit the thing. Even as Brunin's sword connects and leaves a fiery trail, your scythe then comes in right after it, dispelling the fire, but leaving this, if it was possible, an even more blacky inkness along the cut you make. So go ahead and roll your damage.
Two-headed weapons get time and a half to strength, right?
Yep,
that is correct.
Damage. 24 points of damage.
The thing howled in pain for Brunin's attack, but it screeches when your scythe touches it. Its head reappears, and you see the mouth is facing you, but it's quivering. What is that? Where did you get that scythe?
It's not a scythe.
Sorry, what is it? It's a sword?
Two-handed sword.
Sorry, I kept thinking your character was using a scythe. Do you have a different character that uses a scythe?
Yes. That would be Ruka.
Okay, well, it quivers and says, "Where did you get that sword?" But in its rage, suddenly it erupts and lets out the shockwave at 20, I think it was, yeah, a 26. So if a 26 hits you, you take, if I remember what I rolled correctly, you take 13 points of damage, 13 points of negative energy damage. That will be its turn. And after the thing is Brunin, it is now your actual turn.
All right, he will try to hit it again.
All right, go for it.
But a 16 does not hit, does it?
No, it does not. It has recovered from its rage and explosion, and now it is much more alert. You try the same strike again, but it's ready for you, and it actually separates itself. Like, part of its torso comes apart. Part goes up, part goes down, and your sword flies through thin air.
All right. He has a second hit. I'm not thinking that one's going to hit either, though. Let me see.
Well, who knows? Maybe you'll roll a 20. No, same thing. As you try to change the angle of your sword, the same thing happens. It separates itself and your sword flies through the air. Right. Miles, your turn now.
He's going to take another couple shots at it.
All right. And I will say that this time, because Yeti, you realize what's going on, you now have a slightly more firm touch on Miles.
Awesome.
Miles groans slightly as he begins his attacks as the Yeti's holding on to him, but at the moment he's not doing anything about it. That would be a 31 with flanking.
Oh my goodness, I'm tempted to give you extra damage for that. Yeah, okay, you hit. Roll your damage. Man.
Seventeen.
All right. How do you want to do this?
Oh, I went to roll my second one and it's a crit, but that's not going to matter, huh?
No.
After his first attack, he resets himself and comes back around, and his sword erupts into a purplish flame as the curse takes more effect, and whatever special power is actually allowing him to hit it combine as he rends the thing top to bottom in half.
Right, and when the two halves have been rent asunder, you hear a groan as both fall to the ground and dissipate into a black mist. But the mist does start swirling into like a ball in front of you. At this point, the doctor has finally gotten a hold of the time stones, and he's doing something with his remote and the screwdriver, and finally says, "There!" And suddenly the mist all fall to the ground. You see this dark dust on the ground, and the doctor says, "Aha, aha, we've dislocated the connection that this timeline had to the original timeline, or was that the revised timeline? Either way, we fixed things." At this point, Aesel, you kind of got. We're gonna say that you got in the. We were in the back of everybody. And kind of were in the back of the TARDIS doing something when you heard the commotion and were able to get out a little bit late. But as soon as you get out, you see Miles slicing the thing in two, and it coalesces into a ball and then falls to the ground in dust. And you have saved the doppelganger Katsu.
The Golden Yeti will actually reach down for the doppelganger Katsu and say, "You're right. Are you harmed?"
Katsu is a little taken aback at this giant Yeti that's talking to him, but he quickly gets up and says, "Yeah, I think I am. Is that me riding on your back?"
"That's not important now. What's important is that you're safe." As he tries to deflect the mind-bending question.
Very quickly, you hear the sound of doors clanging open as you see some of the monks or priests have come back into the church, and they're armed with rods and magic wands, and they come in and they realize, they realize that the dark entity is gone, but they see this golden Yeti looming over Katsu, and they shout, "Back! Away from him, you vile creature of darkness!"
You see the Golden Yeti chuckle and say, "You haven't even seen me in my true form yet." But he backs away as requested and says, "I believe the threat is over. I pose no threat to you. I only seek to protect."
The doppelganger raises his arms and runs towards his companions and says, Hey, guys, no, it's okay, really. They saved me. There was a black entity something there, and they were able to save me." At which point, the men and women kind of relax a bit, but they still look a little bit wary at you. A few of them are looking very curiously at the TARDIS, tapping it and asking, "What in the world this is?" But a few of them come over to where the dark energy is and where their leader had been turned into dust, and they bow their heads and they say, "We will need to give him a proper send-off later." They lift their eyes, and one who looks like he might be in charge says to all of you, "I do not know where you come from, but I thank you for preserving us and the life of our friend Katsu. I just wish you had come soon enough to save the High Priest." At which point, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it is a shame that we were not able to save his life. We did what we could. Protected as many as we could from the darkness.
The man nods his head. That is all that can be asked of any of us. And and then he notices someone on your back. Is that Arnon? But and then he looks at the doppelganger, looks to Katsu, looks at the doppelganger, looks to Katsu. What has transpired here?
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans? You are Katsu.
What? I didn't say that. I'm his, twin brother. Yes. Yeah.
He nods his head and, it's obvious he doesn't quite understand, but he's just going with it. And then he looks to the doppelganger. Katsu. We had best get you to somewhere safe and bandage up some of those wounds. Thank you again, my friends. And if there's anything we can do for you, please feel free to ask.
In fact, I do say that... Is doppelganger Katsu injured at all?
He's got a bruise on his elbow from falling, but that's it.
Okay. Just because. Jolden Yeti will reach out and place his hand on his shoulder and cast my healing hex.
All right. The bruise goes away, and Katsu looks at you and says, thank you. Thank you again. And in fact, normal Katsu, you feel something warm inside. Like something is giving you more energy right now.
Oh, boy. It's like there's something... Something's off, guys. Not sure what.
The doctor takes his remote thing and looks at you and says, okay, back, everyone back. You! And he points to all the priest and especially the doppelganger Katsu. You need to get out of the room. Now, quick, run! And all of them run as fast as they can.
Should I be running too?
Probably.
The doctor puts it,
starts bounding towards the TARDIS.
The doctor shoves a hand at you and says, no, Katsu, no, not the TARDIS!
Stops!
Katsu, you suddenly start glowing, very bright, and you feel this surge of power come over you. And when the light fades away, you are back in your normal clothes, and you have all your normal gear on you, with the exception that you also have a diamond bucket. You may now use your normal character sheet.
Yay! Katsu is very happy to have his diamond bucket. And puts on his head as a helmet for now. And just to test out his powers, he casts heal on himself since he actually has his own boo-boo from the old diamond bucket on the head thing.
And it works.
So that, he is pleased.
The ground shakes. All of you feel a little tremor.
Now what's happening?
Should we go? and actually, Mew, or Golden Yeti Mew, will actually go around to the others and also cast Healing Hex on all of them. Everyone who was caught in the AoE. So, should I just roll once for everyone?
Yeah, go ahead.
Meh. Four points of healing. Not so great, but hey.
The ground shakes again. The doctor looks at his remote and says, this is not good. The excess energy that came when we disconnected this area from the main timeline, it's, okay, we all gotta go now. He rocks to the TARDIS, and suddenly the TARDIS doors slam shut. Doctor takes out a key and turns it and tries to move, but nothing happens. Oh, no. He takes out his sonic screwdriver, runs it over. She closed herself up. She can't let the excess energy into the TARDIS, otherwise the known universe will collapse. But what in the world is it coalescing into? Uh-oh. And all of the dark dust that was that creature suddenly starts swirling around. And it forms itself back into the creature. This time, though, it shakes and wobbles, gets much bigger, and forms itself into what looks like very much the form of a man. A man, he looks at everybody, and you can tell it still has this dark aura on it, but it's become much more distinct that this is a man with black leather pants, shirtless but wearing a black vest, and his black hair comes down to his shoulders. Also, he carries a staff, and he looks at all of you. Pitiful fools. Ah, you've done well to thwart my plans here. Look at the two of you. And he points at Brunin and at Katsu. Ah, restoring yourselves to your former glories. But it shall all be for naught. For while you have disconnected the hold that these lands had on your timeline, you have also released time's hold on me. Ah, as you become stronger now, so do I. And he brandishes his staff. And now I shall kill all of you and be done with it. The time stone in the doctor's hand suddenly starts glowing. And you hear this woman's voice shout out, "Embrace destiny!" Katsu and Brunin, you both start glowing again. This time, though, when the glow does not entirely fade away, but you have this white light aura all around you. And suddenly you realize your equipment is just a little different. And you feel stronger, feel far stronger than you ever have before. You know that something has changed. Somehow you have more power. And in an instant, memories flash by you. Memories of living in Hyphantonar and of Galarin and completing great deeds for the guild, of slaying giant creatures. And it's not anything you've experienced before. Not memories of what you have done, but somehow memories of another Katsu or another Brunin or what you might do in the future. And as the glow fades away enough for everyone to see you, you see that they definitely look a lot more powerful. Both of you, please use your Hero of Destiny character sheets. And everyone who wants to, roll initiative.
Okay.
All right. Katsu's like, "Whoa, I'm not sure what's going on, but I think I like it."
I'm with you, man.
Yeah, give me a second. I'm writing all this down. All right, I think I got everybody. The doctor is just standing there, dumbfounded, scanning the two of you, and he says, "Impossible." All right, Brunin, you have the highest, and you also rolled a crit. So before the creature is ready to react, shocked at the transformation that suddenly occurred, you get an opportunity to act. You're only about 20 feet away from the thing.
Okay, he will go and try to smack him with... Is his sword still a fire sword?
Yes, it is.
Alrighty, and bull strength still up?
No, Bull's strength disappeared when the transformation happened.
Okay. He will still go try to attack. And can he do his power attack if he moves first?
Yes. Yes, he can.
I think that's a 27.
All right, 27. Did you add 2 from the sword?
No. Where is that?
The sword you're using is a +2.
Oh, I was looking in the total on the melee.
Okay, yeah, use that and then add 2 for the sword.
Okay, so then 29.
29. That does hit. And you're not touching the stone or someone else who has the stone, but the burning that you're giving the thing, it actually seems like it's taking pain from this. You are doing damage. So roll your damage.
I think that's 28.
All right. Did you also add the 1d6?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you smack it and fire appears along where you hit it, which it instantly brings its hand up to snuff out the fire, but where you hit it is smoking and he looks mad and in a good bit of pain. All right, and that's your turn. And also you get a second turn because now is your normal turn in the initiative.
All righty. He will try to smack him again.
All right, go for it. A 34 does hit.
In the damage that is already includes the +2 for flaming longsword, right? On the sheet.
Yes, you add +2 to your damage for the longsword.
So that's not already calculated then?
Okay, on the character sheet you have there, where it says the damage underneath the longsword, you know, this D plus a number, yes, that's already calculated in that.
Okay. Do I still add strength?
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Oh, okay. Okay, 20 total.
All right, you attack, and as it's trying to put out the rest of the smoke, you attack it again and hit it on the arm this time, from which it yelps in pain and just stares you down. This is not possible. I killed them. This is not possible. All right, and that will be your turn. No, wait. You get another attack. You get multiple attacks. That's right. So you can go ahead and do your full round if you want.
All right. How many of these do you want me to make?
As many as you have available, because you started next to him, so you can take your full round of attacks.
All righty. Ooh, crit.
Oh dear.
Okay, you're going to have to tell me how that works, though, because I've never critted before.
Okay, same thing. Roll your damage like normal, and then we're going to multiply it by a certain amount. For your sword, because of the feats you've been given, I think it's 3 times damage. And if I remember correctly, that includes your fire attack. So yeah, add your whatever is your normal rolling plus whatever the number is next to that plus your your rolling for the sword and just multiply it all by 3.
So roll plus flame plus strength.
Yeah,
plus
essentially
longsword times 3.
Yeah, since I think you have all of the things that give you damage for your attack, I think all of that is gets multiplied by the crit. I don't think you have anything that doesn't get multiplied by crit. So just do damage like normal, but then multiply it by 3.
Total.
It groans as you slice it up good. I mean, this is this full round where your sword actually cut through from the front to the back between him. Somehow he is still holding together, but he looks like he is in great pain. And the fire you just started on his middle is not going out. It's staying there.
All right. So do I still get the next 2 hits?
Yeah, yes, you do. Yes, a 32 does hit. All right, as it groans more, it's still standing, but you've obviously beaten up this thing a good bit. In fact, its clothes that it's wearing, they seem to be tearing apart a little bit.
Okay, and 14 probably does not hit.
No, 14 does not hit. This time it was finally ready for you and was able to just barely jump out of the way.
All right. All that kid's Bruce mad at him for messing up everything.
All right. After Bruce's masterful performance, will come Carrick.
All right. I think that Carrick is going to... Carrick is still right there. Is he next to this guy?
Unless you guys... I assumed you guys all moved towards the TARDIS when it was time to go, and then the TARDIS door is closed. So I'm assuming you guys are all about 20 feet away from the thing.
Okay. But Brew didn't move away?
No, Brew did. She had to move up. She critted on her initiative, so I gave her an extra round.
Then Carrick is going to hold an action to cast a spell, and essentially he is going to pull out his pipe and start to take a smoke, because it doesn't look like Brew needs too much help. But he is okay. Holding an action to cast a spell.
Roger that. Okay, Carrick, excuse me,
Mew. The trigger for that would be if the bad guy gets a chance to attack anybody. So if he attacks one of the allies, if he makes an attack, then Carrick will cast.
Got it. Mew, your turn.
I'm out of spells. I don't have any harming hexes. And I don't want to get near him, because considering he's far more powerful than I am. I am going to pull out, trying to contemplate. If I get near him, he'll kill me. I'm gonna drop form. Just dismiss the golden yeti, return back to my normal form, reach behind my back, pull out the laser pickaxe, flip the top end of the pickaxe down to make it into a laser bolt, and fire.
All right, roll your attack.
Nope, that is a 9.
No, that does not hit at all. The leg you were aiming at, it moves before you push the button. It's as if it knew.
Yeah. He looks to the other two and turns over to Carrick and says, "So what kind of leaf is that? Long bottom leaf? Or is it more of the Hobbiton brew?"
"Oh, this is just a little bit of stuff that we'd grow back at my old home where I grew up. It's quite a nice leaf, but it's, you know, somewhat common according to most people's taste, but I like it."
Arnon Katsu, it is now your turn.
All right. First thing I will... let's see. Let's see what we got here. So, I got a ton of stuff.
Yes, you do.
So, I will try out... I'll try out the quickening spell, and I'll do it on Brumin.
Alright, what's the quickening spell do?
It says you cast spells... Oh wait, no, I cast spells.
Okay, yeah, that's a feat. It essentially lets you cast two spells in the same turn. Just one of your spells has to use up a slot that I think is 4 steps higher than normal. Which you are more than welcome to use, because you have those slots available.
Right. Okay, I see why I went wrong here. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't scroll down, so I didn't see that went to the feats category. I was like, alright, I'll just...
Yeah, sorry, I put all the spells on your character sheet, so you've got a large character sheet.
Yeah. I'll go with, I'll give Brumin Holy Lance then, which is you give a weapon your holy special weapon quality or something.
Okay. Does it give a... What kind of benefit does it give to the weapon?
All it says is it gives a holy special quality touch. But I'll look it up real quick. So we can make a holy fire sword. Maybe.
A holy weapon is imbued with holy power. This power makes the weapon good aligned and thus bypasses the corresponding damage reduction. Deals an extra 2d6 points of damage against all creatures of evil alignment. Well, this creature is evil, so yes, that would work.
All right, that's what I do. I buff Brumin's sword even more so. If it ain't broken, all right. Fix it.
All right, is that all you're going to do?
Oh, that's right. I have a quickening spell, so that means I cast 2 spells, right?
Well, it depends on if you use the quickening feat. If you do, then the spell you just cast, it will use up a slot that's 4 levels higher.
Alright. Yeah, I think that's all I can do. I mean, I might move away from it so I don't get hurt. But yeah, that's just what I do for now.
Okay. After Katsu's turn comes Miles. No, excuse me, comes Aesel.
Seeing all of this, I'm going to hold my action to cast a spell later. Same thing as Carrick. Basically, whenever the guy decides to attack one of us, unleash a spell on him. And then I'm just going to stand back and just nod appreciatively to Carrick smoking.
All right, after Aesel will be Miles.
So, Miles kind of has the same idea as Carrie. Hey, I seem to be doing okay. I'm just going to kick back and enjoy the show.
All right. And the doctor is actually doing much of the same thing. He's actually just standing there slack-jawed at all of this. All right. And now, finally, because he rolled horribly on his initiative, is the thing's turn. And the thing, his eyes, which you can see his face now, look menacingly upon Brunin, and he reaches out one hand to try to grab him. Just a moment. Does a 38 hit you?
Oh, yes.
All right. For those who were prepping in action, he is now attacking.
First off, immediate action, paladin sacrifice. So I'm going to take that hit. But he will also throw a snowball at him.
Okay. The snowball happens first, so throw your snowball.
26.
All right, the snowball, again, it's almost as if he knew it was coming, and he just kind of moves off to the side as your snowball harmlessly passes by.
You said that was with a 26, right? 26 missed?
Yes. Yes, a 26 missed. Okay. I mean, the thing has been hit bam-bam-boom by Brunin, and he's still standing. That should tell you something about his level.
Okay, cool.
All right. Aesel, you were preparing an action also?
Yeah, I'm also going to throw a snowball. And I rolled a crit, natural 20.
All right, then it does hit, and you will... this is a spell, so you don't get crit damage, but you do get normal damage. All right. It did not. It was too busy avoiding Carrick's snowball that it actually didn't notice yours. And it hits, and, you know, he shakes it off, but it, unlike the other snowballs, it actually seems to have done some damage to him. So, you know, he looks at it more as a minor annoyance and just glares at you. But now he Go ahead.
It also has to make a fortitude saving throw, but I'm pretty sure it's...
That's right. What's the fortitude save?
16.
Oh, yeah, he has to. He makes it easy. He can't miss it. Okay, so yeah, he makes it, and he's fine. All right, now his attack comes in, and it hits... And his damage is going to be... Hang on a second.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hello?
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 Hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we can.
Cool. Sorry. Quiet there. So... Had to reconnect.
Okay, so are you still using Paladin Sacrifice?
Say no.
Carrick, is Carrick still using Paladin Sacrifice?
Just a second.
Okay.
How was he attacking? Was he reaching out to grapple him, or did he like swing him?
No, he's reaching out to touch him with his hand.
Yeah, he used it. It's the way the dice went. He used it.
All right. Brunin, you suddenly feel this surge of energy draining from you, but then the same instant it comes back. Carrick, instead, you feel yourself become drained as if the life is being pulled out of you, and you take 13 points of damage.
Oh, see, that's not that bad.
Yeah, hang on a second. No, that is right. Okay. Yeah, you take... Is that... Okay, you take 13 points of damage. And then... just as instantly, his other hand comes and strikes and tries to strike Brunin also. And that misses completely. In fact, he crit fumbled on that one. And he actually stumbled just a bit as you moved yourself out of the way. And I'm actually going to, you better be thankful for this. You better be thankful for this, Carrick. I'm actually going to take away the rest of his attacks because he stumbled like that.
Well, Carrick, as he took the hit for Brumman, just gritting his teeth, taking the pain, he's like, "Not my friends. Not today." And he's still there. And he's not sorry he took it. So there, Brumman.
Alright, after the thing, we go back to the top, and it is Brunin's turn.
Does Brumman know what Carrick has done?
I don't know. Roll a wisdom check. Wisdom check to see, because you know he has this ability. Okay, yeah, you figure it out that for some reason the thing touched you, and you know you should have felt more pain. In fact, you were starting to, and then it went away. But the thing acted like it had still hurt you, so you put two and two together that Carrick is using his ability on you.
All right, he doesn't turn to look at Carrick, but he definitely growls, "Carrick, cut it out!" And then he will try to attack again.
All right, go ahead. A 34 does hit. Roll your damage, and don't forget about the extra 2d6 from Holy.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, you do damage. And in fact, when you strike him, you make another line of fire, but this time it is white fire, glowing with holy power. He's still standing, though.
All right, he's going to attempt the power attack again.
Okay.
Which is more math. And he crit failed.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna have you roll a high or low. No, actually, I'm gonna have you after you call. I'm gonna roll the dice. Call high or low.
High.
Nah, it was low. Okay, your sword embeds itself in some of the wood up there, and you are able to yank it out, but you do forfeit the rest of your attacks.
Fair enough.
Okay, after Runin's turn, it comes to Carrick.
Carrick is going to kind of speak over his pipe and be like, "Don't know what you're talking about there, brute. Oh, you're setting that pew on fire there. You might want to be a little bit more careful." And he's going to hold his action again and keep smoking. He grimaces a little bit to himself, though, and kind of grips his side.
Mew, will you do anything?
I'm pretty sure Carrick hit with a 26 and missed. I only have a plus 5 on my weapon. So, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do something relatively stupid. I am going to go over to the backside of the creature, so I am now flanking with Brumin. But instead, I'm gonna actually activate levitate and float up just a tiny bit so that he doesn't immediately just reach around and snatch me. And that's my turn.
All right. So we have Mew floating behind, giving a flanking bonus. Excellent. After Mew comes Hazel. No, excuse me. Reading this wrong. Katsu, is your turn now. Just for reference, the creature looks like a man now. It's still standing, but it's obvious that it's hurt pretty bad.
All right. Well, I will use another... I will actually, how far am I away from the creature?
20 feet.
20 feet. Let me see. What I will do is, first I will go over to Carrick and, I'll do my heal spell on him. Yes. Sorry, thinking of all the options. Yes, so I'll go heal Carrick if I can move close enough to him. If not, I will go and try and summon a positive elemental.
Okay, yeah, you're plenty close enough to Carrick that you could get over and use the heal spell.
All right. For healing, do I roll a different die, or is it the same, like, D8 die for healing?
What level of healing are you using? Are you using cure light wounds, cure moderate wounds, cure serious wounds?
I'll say, cure moderate wounds?
Well, I think it's 2D8. And then plus your level. I'll shoot you a link to it.
Okay, so 2d8. So rolled 2d8 twice. Alright, 1. And then a 3. And then plus my level?
Yeah, maximum of 10, though. So 2d8 plus 10.
Okay. So that'd be 14. Because... I rolled a 4 on the 2 turns. So 14 points of hit points cured, hopefully, if I'm doing this right.
Yes, you are.
All right, then. have 14 hit points back. So yes, my character goes over to Carrick and runs over and just like hits him on the side that he was actually holding, and it's like, hey, let me think of something cool to say. You don't have to carry this burden alone. And he goes to heal him for 14 hit points.
Carrick grins and nods, and he's like, thanks, mate. I think I needed that.
All right. After that, now it is Aesol's turn.
Is it wearing armor?
You don't see any, no.
Okay. I'm going to hold an action again and wait for it to attack, preparing a spell.
All right. Miles, do you do anything?
He's enjoying the show. Coughing a little bit at the smoke coming from nearby.
Okay. The thing has all these dark thing cuts around it, and he notices that Mew has come up behind him, but he just shrugs it off like insignificant worm. Real threat is in front of me, and he is going to try again to attack Brunin. All right, he's attacking. So those of you who had readied actions, you may use them now. Okay, so Carrick, what do you do?
Carrick is going to cast Entangle. This is about the only thing he has left. And he is going to attempt to cast it in the back corner so that essentially the bad guy is entangled, but Brew is on the edge of it.
Okay, yeah, I'll allow you to aim properly. Go ahead.
Yes, so it is a DC 16 reflex save.
Okay, and he passes it. Again, it's almost as if he knew it was coming, and so he just shuffles his feet out of the way. And in fact, some of the vines actually do touch his feet, but they go through it. Like, his feet suddenly become incorporeal, and they're not able to tangle him up.
And I'm going to cast Snowball again.
Do it.
Yeah, no, that didn't hit.
Okay, yeah, it saw it coming and just shuffled out of the way as it brings its staff to bear on Brunin. Does a 33 hit?
Yes.
Paladin sacrifice.
So make sure I have the right dice. Okay. Okay, you can't roll an 11 with a D8, so that's the wrong die. Let me try that again. Okay, you take 9 points of damage from the first attack. Does a 26 hit you?
Yes.
Eleven points of damage from the second attack. Oh dear, math. Does a 33 hit?
Yes.
Okay, 14 points of damage from that attack, and he gets one more. As he just takes his staff and goes 1-2-1-2 left and right with it, smacking you on the shoulders, the head, the side. His last attack. And is that a... No, it doesn't. Good. That is a 30. Does a 30 hit you?
Yes.
And that's another 14 points of damage.
And that all went to Carrick, didn't it?
Yes, he goes left and right, and he's slamming you hard in the shoulders, the side, the head, but for some reason, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt you one little bit. Meanwhile, in the back, all of you are seeing Carrick convulse just a little. Carrick, are you still standing?
Carrick only took first hit. He only blocked, it's an immediate action to block one hit.
And oh, he can't did block take the rest.
That. He can only block one hit, so he took his 9 points of damage, yes.
Okay, then the rest of them then go to Brunin. Fourteen was the last attack. Okay, so the first time he smacks you hard in the head, you don't feel it. The rest of them, though, you felt the damage from that. All right, and that will be his turn. And we come next to Brunin. Get your revenge. You now get a +2 to your attack because Mew is flanking him from the back.
All right, he's going to try that power attack again. So when it says 17 to 20, it's crit. Does that mean a 19 is a crit?
That does.
Sweet.
Wait, 17 to 20 is crit?
For a longsword?
I gave you some major feats. Okay, yeah.
Well, I think on mine, my regular sheet, it says 19 to 20, so it would still apply?
Yes. Okay, if the regular sheet is 19 to 20, the feat I gave you doubled crit for the longsword. So that means, yes, it is 17 to 20.
I am assuming, does the power attack damage not count towards the triple?
I think it does not, no. But everything else does.
And flanking is just for attack roll, right?
Yes, that's right.
Does the extra from the fire and the katsu thing still count?
I'm not sure.
What was the question?
The extra from being a fire sword and from the holy damage. Does that also get multiplied with crit? I'm thinking it doesn't.
I will look it up.
Okay, for right now...
I think it does, but yeah, let me... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And... In that case, you know what? Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, multiply it with the crit.
And you said power attack does not.
Still things that seems to think it does.
Seems to be ambiguous on the forums, unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure with Pathfinder that it specifies if it doesn't. Otherwise, it does. Pathfinder, you pretty much double everything. Or multiply everything.
Okay, go ahead and add power attack damage to the crit also.
Alrighty, then that's an 84.
How do you want to do this?
with a flourish and probably something of a growl.
All right, you flourish the blade as it dances all over this guy. Swish, swish, swash. And as soon as you're done cutting, it's like the thing just stays there for a moment. And then, total anime style, parts of it start sliding off of each other. And then it collapses into dust. It's dead.
Is it still dead with all the stuff Mako just posted?
So basically, the only thing that wasn't doubled was the fire damage, and I think holy damage. But everything else does.
That's okay. It was close enough to death that she still killed it. All right, and as soon as the battle ends, you see Katsu and Brunin both start glowing again. And a woman, but the two of you, nobody else's, but the two of you hear a woman's voice that says, "Well done, my heroes. Well done." And the light fades away and you are back to normal. And by normal, I mean you get to be using your original character sheets from now on.
That was epic.
Was indeed. So I need to, like, deities now or what?
I think that was a one-time thing.
Well, if you ever feel another glowing session coming on, let me know.
Don't worry, I'll definitely won't keep it a secret.
The doctor is running over the two of you with his sonic screwdriver, and he says, "Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. The excess energy from when we dissipated all the time energies linking this timeline to the other one, it coalesced on you. And I don't understand. How did... What?
The world is a mysterious place, my friend.
The dust that was once the creature suddenly starts vibrating again. And it actually rises back up into this wavering image, barely able to hold itself together. And a voice says, "You have bested me for now. But mark it. The void will consume all. You have not seen the last of Susivni." And the blackness kind of shrinks in on itself until it's one tiny, tiny little dot of blackness and disappears.
Pity, I was hoping this journey had been over. It looks like we still have a bit of a ways to go.
The doctor nods his head. "We still have two more parts of this time stone thing in order to get together." And he looks at it and realizes that he's been holding the rock. But his arm is not crystallizing, much to his sudden relief. And instantly he's running his screwdriver and his remote over it again, and he's looking at it. "Why am I not crystallizing? Why am I not? Aha! Aha! I have it. All right, everybody, let's get back." And with that, he rushes over to the TARDIS, which finally does open its doors for him.
Brumen will come up to Carrick and kind of put his, hand on his back, kind of by his neck, and just kind of grip his shirt and mutter very lowly, "Carrick, don't take my hits."
"I don't know what you're talking about there, mate, but you did a bully fine job out there, really. It was incredible to watch. If you could have seen it from this angle, it was amazing. I mean, there are a few spots you could have done better, but that's all right. I'm sure you'll improve with time." And he will do his best, if he can, to just kind of wink and slip off.
Brutal shake his head, and then try to catch Azel's eye.
She smiles a little at him.
He'll just wink at her and move on.
Oh, dear. She turns, gives a shake of her head. So full of himself now.
Well, can't blame him. If I could do that, I might be susceptible to a little bit of egotism myself. And we will follow inside the TARDIS.
All right, does everyone else go into the TARDIS?
Yes, Carrick went inside. And he is just finishing his smoke, so he'll put the pipe out.
I make sure I look around and check to see if we left anything. Like, make sure I have my diamond bucket and everything.
Yes, you do. And just as a point for you, you don't remember this building at all. I mean, the events that were transpiring in here, where they rescued you, you don't remember that happening.
How many of this? And he just kind of looks around, making sure he didn't forget anything. And yeah, if there are no items around that he forgot, then he'll go back into the TARDIS.
There's a hymn book, but
no. I take the hymn book! It's not belted down!
Actually, the doctor looks at you and says, bad idea to be bringing items from one rogue timeline to another. We should probably leave that
there. I guess so. Can I still take my diamond bucket?
The doctor looks at you. Where'd you get that?
Never mind. There's no time!
He runs his screwdriver over it. It's not giving off any inverse chromaton energy, so it should be okay. That's strange.
And so I'll just go back inside the TARDIS and not talk. Hopefully he doesn't change his mind.
Miles, as you come in, the doctor does stop you and looks at your blade and asks, where did you get that sword?
That's a story I would rather not speak of. I've had it for a while.
The doctor nods his head, consults his remote, and looks back at you. Just be careful with it. All right, and with that, the doctor closes up the doors, throw some levers, and the TARDIS shovers a little bit as you hear the familiar groaning sounds of its workings. And after a few moments of shaking and rattling, everything stops, doctor opens the door, and you are back in the headquarters.
Home sweet home.
Well, how was the trip?
The instant you're off the TARDIS, you are accosted by the old man.
I suppose you had a delightful 7.5 minutes.
7.5? Oh, right. Time travel. Much more successful than I would have expected for going against a dark god.
A dark god? Is that what he calls himself? Interesting. Very interesting.
Everybody go ahead and roll a wisdom save. Or wisdom check, whatever.
I've been 18 for the save, but only a 12 for the check.
Yeah, sorry, not the save, not the will save, but I want a straight up wisdom check. Roll a d20, add your wisdom modifier.
That would be a 12.
14.
20 total.
All right, for all of you who rolled 15 or higher, you notice something. when the dark entity had become more powerful and been able to form itself into something that much more resembled a man, you realize now, looking at the old man, that his face very, very closely resembles that of the old man, like a younger version of the old man.
Curious. Also, I rolled a 19. So.
Okay, so then you noticed also. The old man coughs to himself.
Something you want to tell me? You're looking at me strange.
You look familiar.
Well, if memory serves, I met you yesterday, so yes, I should be familiar.
Fair enough, but not like that.
Oh, don't begin telling me we're related or something, that you're my second cousin twice removed on the mother's side of the dad.
Oh gosh, I hope not.
Me too, because I don't think that's possible.
And cut.
Anyway, he points his stick at Brunin. Brunin!
Sorry, GM is actually suffering the flu, and the brain is getting a little fried.
Brunin, the general, is in a conference right now, and it'd probably be a good idea for you to hear what's going on. Tell them I sent you. Actually, better yet, don't. Just show up. Just see what happens. Go, 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 go. Shoot, shoot, shoot. Now.
Carrick follows Brunin to the meeting.
And Brew will go to the meeting. But he'll again give Carrick a significant glance of, don't do it.
All right. Meanwhile, the old man points at...
You never know what's going to happen.
Old man points at everyone else. The rest of you can do whatever you want. But I suspect you'll be going on another mission very soon. So I would get prepped for it. Get some rest. Get some nice food. Not that slop that they throw in the kitchen. I can tell you about the secret stash if you want. It's down the hall. Third door on the left. Just tell them. Give them the special code. Left shoe right. I have no idea why they came up with that code. Oh, wait. I came up with that code. That's right. That means it's clever. Left shoe right. They'll give you the good stuff. Okay. Goodbye. And with that, the old man just trots off back to his chair, where he sits and contemplates and draws a little.
He turns towards Hazel and says, and jukes his thumb in the direction of the hallway and says, left shoe right?
Left shoe right, I suppose.
Alright, and they go to get the good stuff.
All right. Brunin and Carrick, you both eventually come to the conference room where Kasumi is getting a report from one of the soldiers. And you don't hear the first part of it, but you do hear the soldiers say, I'm afraid, ma'am, that it has been confirmed. Salil and the Harbinger have been taken captive over at Mount Trodiskafar, and suddenly the soldier notices that you have come in.
Yeah, he pales pretty quickly at that.
Kasumi turns around and notices that it's you. She at first looks a little angry and then sighs and said, I suppose you were going to find out soon enough anyway. Come in and... Yes, Bryn and Carrick too.
Brew goes in.
Kasumi just rolls her eyes at Brunin's antics. Although, it almost looks like she smiles just a little bit. But then she looks at the soldier and says, tell them what you told me. The soldier nods his head. Yes, ma'am. Lieutenant, about an hour ago, we received reports from our scouts. We have been looking at... trying to figure out what's been going on at Mount Trodiskafar. and we had sent in Salil and the Harbinger as the first scouts to go in deep, try to figure out what in the world the Empire has going on there. They weren't able to get out much, but they were able to send us, before they were captured, a detailed map of the mountain and a facility that's being built in there. It has some strange marks that we haven't been able to figure out what they mean, but we also had scouts reporting that they saw the Harbinger get taken down by some sort of energy weapon, and all hands were, fortunately, they are alive, but they were subdued, tied up, and taken further into the mountains. That's all the report we have right now.
Bremen looks a little bit relieved hearing that they're still alive, but he certainly mutters some not very nice words under his breath.
Kasumi then turns to Brunin. I suppose there's no point in trying to keep you from this mission. And if I remember correctly, the doctor and the old man said one of the time stones you're looking for is over there. Brunin, if you would like, I will allow you to lead the mission to rescue Salil the Harbinger.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Carrick, I'm going to assume you and your merry band are going to want to go along too.
Well, but of course, it's our duty to go and aid these wonderful people that have been captured. Like you said, the friends to yours, Bruman, we will go and find them. I will find them. I promise. We'll bring them all back.
Kasumi shakes her head, but you can just see as she's looking down, she's not quite as upset as she normally is, and she even smiles just a little bit, which is quickly covered up with a frown. Very, very well. We'll have some of our troops preparing to make a distraction tomorrow morning. At that time, you will be sliding into the mountain to infiltrate their prison, bring out Salil, and try to get that stone, whatever it is. But I need you to understand, Brunin, Salil and the Harbinger come first. If you have the opportunity to grab this stone, whatever it is, go ahead. But I want our people out. Do you understand, Lieutenant?
Yes, ma'am.
Very good. You're dismissed. Go get your team ready.
Brew leads the way out and probably assumes that the others went for the better food, but he's not very talkative and looks a little shaken.
All right. Well, meanwhile, over at the good spot, the door, you knock on the door, and actually an eye hole slits open, and a guy looks at you. Yeah? What? He stares Mew down and anybody else who went with him, and one eyebrow arches. You want something? I don't got all day.
I believe Matilda left you right.
Shh! Not so loud! Not so loud! The eye hole closes and the door opens. All right, right, quick, come in. You gotta keep it down. If everybody knew what was in here, you know what kind of riot we would have. And you're brought into a room that has the good stuff. It's not the normal slop you get from the cafeteria. There is a very, very nice selection of meats hanging on the wall. You have fresh fruit over in the corner. There's several vegetables that have been sautéed with special seasonings that pretty much attack your noses and are calling out to you, eat me. Yes, come get me.
Mew seems to, his face just absolutely begins to brighten and glow with joy. And you almost see a tiny little tear trickle out of his eye. and he says, yes,
You can't turn down an invitation such as this one. Don't worry, my friends. I will make you better.
Hold it there. And the man grabs you, pulls you back from the counter, and says, all right, first you gotta take the oath. He raises his right hand and looks warily at you.
Yes?
Do all of you raise your hand?
I raise my hand.
Yes?
Yep.
All right. All right, new bloods, you repeat after me. I solemnly swear.
I solemnly swear.
Solemnly swear, yeah.
I will tell no one and nobody about this place.
I will tell no one and nobody about
this place.
Unless given express permission. He raises an eyebrow at the girl. Well?
Unless given in, sorry.
By the boss.
By the boss.
By
the boss.
Okay, you guys are good. Go ahead, have at it. Plates are over there. Use the serving utensils. Don't grab with your hands. That's uncouth. Spreads germs, and then we gotta kick you out. Go ahead, have at it.
You dives into it with gusto. Is it like the kitchen area?
Think of it as a buffet. There's a counter in front of you, and it has the various meats and some different dishes prepared, vegetables and fruits. Behind that is a kitchen area.
Mew begins to grab food, but then you see his hands start twitching for a second. He takes a breath, and then hops on the other side of the table, and begins serving the food to everyone else.
You hear a click-click as a gun is pointed at your head. Hey! You didn't wash your hands.
You... He's just straight ahead, beads of sweat forming on his forehead. He just holds out his hands towards Katsu.
But of course, and he creates water, just a little bit, just enough for everyone to wash their hands. Although it does get on the floor, which, I don't know, I guess he didn't think this through. Where the water would go afterwards.
The man puts away his gun and says, good enough, and then points at Katsu. You! Mop! Over there. Now.
Can I perform searing light on water? Would it burn it away?
I don't know.
Probably not, so I'll just go get a mop. That I don't want to put a hole in the floor.
Yeah, as Mew serves the food to those who pass by, he does take a little bit of time to, like, sniff some of the food. And say, oh, this would go well with this. And you see, it's almost as if he's running minor calculations in his head.
Meanwhile, Brunin and Carrick, you're walking along, and the old man points you in the direction of where you're supposed to go and gives you the password. You come to the door, and the ice lid opens again. Yeah? What is it?
My comrades are in there, and I need to talk to them. Open the door.
Right, and nobody come into this private room without permission. And then the ice lid slams closed.
Brew bangs on the door.
Iceland opens up again. What? I told you to beat it.
The old man sent me, so open the door.
I don't care who sent you or no way or no how. You don't come into the private room without permissions. And he slams the Iceland closed again.
He slams on the door again.
He opens up the eye slit. Look, this is going to be the last time. What is it?
He gives the password.
Ugh. You could have done that before. It would have been easier. I'm going to have to repair this eye slit with the amount of times I'm slamming it. He very gingerly, gently closes the eye slit, opens the door, brings you in, and puts you through the same oath also.
Yeah, Bree's obviously not very happy about having to go through all this. I don't even want food. I just need to talk to my friends.
No coming in here without the oath. And so, do you take the oath?
Yes.
Does Carrick?
I guess he has to. Yeah, he takes the oath. Although he thinks it's all pretty hilarious and juvenile.
All right, good. And no laughing at the oath. You take this seriously or you take it not at all. Okay, plates are over there. Use the serving utensils to serve yourself. If you decide to cook like your friend does, wash your hands.
I'll be Mew. Makes sense.
Brew glares at the man but walks in. All right, everybody at the same area, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Miles is not there. Miles, where did you go?
He went off to whatever room was assigned him.
Okay, you're in your bedroom with your thoughts.
Brew doesn't really look at anybody, just says, we have the next part of our mission. We're going to the volcano. Our mission is twofold. We have people to rescue, and we've got to get that rock. I believe we're leaving in the morning. Any questions?
Well, sounds like every other mission we've gone on. Now I think I'm good. Who are we saving?
Yeah, I've got a question about that, this bloke, Sally, whatever his name was, he's a friend of yours. How many people are in his crew? I mean, what kind of folk are these that we'll be going after?
GM?
Yeah, I think there's 8 on the crew, but I can't remember on the crew of the Harbinger, but I can't remember entirely. So we'll say 8 for now.
Does that include both Celil and Kanta?
Yes.
All right. There should be about 8 people total.
All right. And how does Kasumi know this Celil and all of them? She seemed a bit broke up about it, so I imagine they're not just your friends, but ours too.
Would Drew know how the general knows them? Well, at the very least, he's a captain in the Resistance. He's been here longer than I have. That's saying much. I imagine he served under her for quite a while.
So, it's just a business relationship, right? I mean, not what you'd call close, right?
Brig gives Carrick a look and goes, oh yes, he's married.
Oh, alright.
And nods to the general.
Excellent. Thank you. It's all I needed to know.
Anything else?
I think I'm good here.
All right. Well, enjoy the food. Sleep well. See you in the morning. And he will go try to find Miles to relay the basic information.
Carrick is going to go ahead and say goodnight to everybody else and go get some rest, because after that fight, he's spent and tired.
Yep. Mew is... got nothing. But he's going to enjoy the food for as long as they will allow him.
Alright, the people allow you to eat food for about another 2 hours when they finally close up shop and kick you out. And
After Brew leaves, seeing as he's kind of downcast, Azel's gonna pocket an apple and go after him.
Okay. Brunin, it is not difficult to find quarters. Yeah. Not difficult to find Miles' quarters. You know where he was assigned to.
He'll go knock on the door.
The door will open. What? We get our next mission already?
Indeed we did, and we're leaving for the volcano tomorrow. You good with that?
Yeah, I'll be there.
We have two express missions. One is to save the people that have been captured. The next is to get the shard. The first is top priority, however.
Okay. As long as it's against Reimer, I'll be there.
I imagine it very much is.
He'll nod and shut the door.
And Brew will walk off.
All right. Rydia, you managed to catch up with Brunin pretty easily because he had to stop at Miles' quarters.
She'll walk up. Look at him. Are you okay?
Yeah, we'll be fine. Just another day in the resistance.
Can I do... what is it? Sense motive or something? Check on that? Because she doesn't believe him.
Yes. That would be against Bruden's bluff check.
Yeah,
you can definitely tell there's something else. No, he's not exactly lying either.
Okay. Are you sure nothing's wrong, Brew?
He takes a deep breath and kind of looks at her like, I'm not sure I want to tell you everything. Let's just say the people we're rescuing are very close friends, and I'm really sick of seeing people die. So let's get in there and save them before they die.
She nods, presses her lips together. I'm sorry. We'll save them, though. And then she gives them a smile and withdraws the apple from her pocket and offers it to him. Hungry? You haven't eaten yet.
He'll smile and take it from her. Thanks.
Anytime. And about earlier, the other battle? The one in the ring and saving Carrick? I'm sorry. About, I guess, attacking you guys. It's not what I wanted to do.
I Bruin gives her a very serious look, I suppose. And so I don't think it's what any of us wanted to do. You have nothing to apologize for.
Doesn't mean I can't feel bad about it. Though I suppose I shouldn't.
He'll kind of pat her on the shoulder and just consider it extra training in case you ever do come up against someone like Mew or myself again. And let's just always be on the same side.
Agreed. Rather not fight against you guys again.
Most definitely.
Well, I guess that's it. See you in the morning?
That's the plan. Sleep well. Get as much rest as you can.
You too. And she'll head toward her own room.
All right, everybody else, when you leave the special place, you do have to go past the large room in order to get to your quarters. And you come to where the old man is sitting in his little alcove. He and the doctor are both going over papers and making notes and stuff and chatting about things at his table. You hear the doctor say, yes, yes, exactly. The hold that these two points in time had on our current timeline was fueling the paradox. But the instant that we let those go, the excess energy dissipated, allowing for these individuals to retain their previous skills and weaken the paradox, and that creature was able to use the excess energy in order to grow. That makes total sense. The rest of it does not. I don't quite get how, and the old man smacks away the doctor's pencil. Well, it's quite simple. Energy from the original timeline was transferred over and gave them extra powers. Didn't you hear the voices coming from the fragments of the tear? The doctor looks at him askance. There were no voices. Yes, there were. You just don't have the right ears to hear it. And then he notices the rest of you. Ah, here are the heroes now. So, tell me, Mr. Katsu, what was it like?
It was like a dream come true. It was very warm and welcoming. It felt like, it's pretty hard to describe, but it felt like I had the power to protect anyone I wished.
Aha! Marvelous. The doctor goes over some more of his notes. I'm curious now. We at least have a name for the creature. It was Sebasai or Suvusu or what did he say his name was after when he
the
left?
Boy?
No, that creature you were fighting. Oh. If you want to try to remember, roll an intelligence check.
That is a natural 20. I wish I could get this on other stuff.
Okay, yeah, you remember. Who all is there? Katsu, Mew is, and Aesil is. I think that's it, yeah. But Katsu, you do remember. The thing
Aesil's
said...
not...
What did you say?
Aesil's not there.
Oh, okay, never mind. Katsu, yeah, you remember. That's right. Thanks. You remember his name. He said his name was Susivni.
Susiv... What?
How do you spell that? Thank you.
Doctor's still waiting for his name. Did you say it?
I say the name, but I personally didn't hear the name properly.
No, Susivni. Okay, you see the old man like shakes just a moment, like jolts at like somebody put an electrical prod to him. He suddenly shakes, but a moment later he has his composure back. Susivni. Interesting name. It's is that that's not Avalonian, is it?
I don't think so.
Huh. Interesting name. Yes, interesting. If you'll excuse me, and he gets up quickly, and he's moving around pretty fast, much faster than he usually does. I have things to do. Yes, I do. Goodbye now.
Can I make a sense motive check?
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, that'd be a total of 13.
Yeah, you get the idea. There's something there. I mean, it's not too obvious to realize that shook him just a bit. But you can't pin what exactly is eating him.
Perhaps we can talk again tomorrow.
The doctor shrugs his shoulders, and he goes ahead and gathers up his papers, and he goes back into the TARDIS to go to bed. And do the rest of you go to sleep?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
I showed my wife the diamond bucket, though.
Oh, yes. You meet up with your wife, and she's very relieved to see you, but then she looks at you and says, Arnon? What? Where'd you get these clothes?
Remember when I was talking about, the other world? This is the other world where I am from.
Daddy, your daughter comes along. Whoa, you look cool. Where'd you get these robes?
On the mission I was on.
Really? They had a robe store? Did you bring any for me, Daddy?
Fortunately not. But, on the brights?
Oh.
Yeah? Oh, sorry.
That's okay, Daddy. But I'm gonna do a new coloring of you in your robes.
Aw, thank you.
Her mother puts her hand on her shoulder. But you're gonna do that tomorrow morning. It's time for you to be going to bed.
Aw, do I have to, Daddy?
Yes, unfortunately, you should listen to your mother so you can grow up and be a very strong woman.
Okay.
And she gives you a very forceful, strong hug on your leg. I love you, Daddy.
Aw, I love you too. And I rub her head.
She hugs her mother also. Her mother reaches down and kisses her on the forehead and then shoos her off to bed. And she turns and looks at you. Arnon, I don't really know what to make of this.
I know, this is hard for me too. Unfortunately, this is who I really am. This guy from another world.
When you say, this is who I really am, she turns away to try to hide her tears. I suppose it's what's right, then. I think I need to turn in. Good night, Arnon.
Good night, my love.
All right, and with that, we are actually going to go ahead and end for tonight. I would like to blame it on the slight headache I have, but it's mostly because there's a little bit of planning I need to do for Mount Trogress so far that's not ready yet. So, it will be ready next week.
All right, thank you so much.